Good evening. I can't speak. Welcome everyone to this lechture, which is part of the Beis Tefila Shovavim series in Tafshin Ayin Tes. Why don't we have a microphone? I don't think we need it. I'm happy to introduce Brad Saltzman. Brad, many of you may have seen his ad around the neighborhood. It sits on different street corners. It's a big trailer that says helping yourself out to internet addiction. Brad specializes in helping people who are addicted to the internet and all of its perils, as well as many other addictions. And one of those addictions is just the device itself. What's happened with these phones that have apparently, if the phones are smart, or if they're making us smart, or maybe the topic is completely different. Brad will certainly have what to tell us about. But Brad has been around. If you saw his bio, he's been in at least 10 different interviews, 10 different radio stations and television shows, and very cool things I've never heard of before. And he's got a lot of experience in treating people who have different kinds of addictions. And I'm happy that Brad was able to come out here tonight, and I want to be voted to the Rav also for doing this series, and also for having somebody who doesn't have rabbi in front of his name come to speak with us. Maybe one day, be a rabbi. Yeah.
Okay. Good evening. Thank you, everyone, for coming tonight, especially with this awesome weather. I was told it was going to snow tonight. I didn't believe them, but it did. I was told I actually missed it, but it snowed for like 5 minutes, right? No one else saw it either. It hailed. There was no snow. My kids said it was snow. My kids swore it was snow. I don't. Okay. Well. In any case, thank you very much to the shul for having me, to Rabbi Malinowitz for inviting me, and for Aryeh and Matt for helping to coordinate this evening. My name is Brad Salzman, and I am the director of a place called the Kivun Recovery Center. Before I made Aliyah, I lived in New York, and I had a center there specializing in treating all the different facets of internet-related addictions. And that's why I'm here tonight. So tonight we'll be talking about, the topic is, can we outsmart smartphones? Now, I actually did not pick the title. Was that you, Matt? Did you pick the title? Was that the rabbi? Maybe Aryeh. It's a good title. I did not pick it, though, but it's nice having a talk where they tell you already the title of the talk you're supposed to speak about. It helps you. I had my own title, which is smartphones really aren't so smart. That was a working title. Another title was smartphones are actually, when you think about it, kind of stupid. So that one is, I guess, less politically correct. But whatever we want to call it, that's what we're talking about. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to start by telling a little story. How many of you guys know what this is, have seen this before, are familiar with this product? Okay, I saw one hand. Okay. TheraBreath is a... what's that? Oh, you're a dentist. Okay. All right. Well, actually, believe it or not, so for those of you who are not dentists, in America, this is actually a top-selling mouthwash that was created by a dentist. And this is not like just a regular mouthwash that's available at Walgreens. This is I think you have to buy it at like higher end places. It's quite expensive. It's supposed to be very effective. I've never tried it. But so the reason I put this here, I was fortunate enough when I was single, I actually went out, I was set up with a young lady whose father owns this company, TheraBreath. At the time, this was a while back, when I was still single, obviously, I never heard of the company, right? And it happens to be, right now, it happens to be, like I said, it happens to be a very hot selling product. But in any case, so I went out with this young lady, and she was a very nice person. It wasn't a match, but you know, she married someone else, as did I. But in any case, what I was thinking about this product, right? So, like I said, her father created this product. Her father was a dentist who decided it might be more profitable than you know, seeing patients all day to make a mouthwash and sell it all over the world, and I think like I said, he's doing very well. But imagine though if I had found out from this young lady, I don't think we even talked about the mouthwash really at all at the time. Like I said, I hadn't heard of it. But imagine if I found out that this girl and her family didn't actually use the mouthwash that they had created. What if they actually said, this mouthwash is actually, like, don't tell anyone, but it's actually really bad for you. It actually, you know, it's really dangerous, and, you know, we would never use it ourselves. Like, we'll sell it to suckers out there, right, because we can make money off of it, but we ourselves would never use it, and we definitely would not tell you privately not to use it. You probably wouldn't buy it, right? And if I had heard that, I'd be like, oh my God, that's horrible. Like, who would sell such a thing like that, right? And that brings us to our topic for tonight. So this was an article that ran about a little over a year ago, year and a half ago almost, in the Independent. But it was covered by all the papers around the world, international news. Bill Gates and Steve Jobs raised their kids tech-free, and it should have been a red flag. Basically, this person did some research and discovered that all the people in Silicon Valley actually do not let their own kids use the internet. Don't let them use the internet. And not only that, they don't want them using screens, right? It says here, interviews with Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, and other tech elites consistently reveal that Silicon Valley parents are strict about technology use. A new book suggests the signs may have been clear years ago that smartphone use should be regulated. Right, so again, this idea here that the people themselves who are creating the technology don't want their own kids using it, right? That should be a sign for the rest of us, right? If it's such a great product they're creating, why are they trying to prevent their own kids from using it, right? This guy right here is a guy named Chris Anderson, who's a former editor of Wired magazine. And in an article in the New York Times, this is his quote on the subject, said, on the scale between candy and crack cocaine, it's closer to crack cocaine. He was talking about using screens. We thought we could control it, and this is beyond our power to control. This is going straight to the pleasure centers of the developing brain. This is beyond our capacity as regular parents to understand, right? So again, just giving you a little bit more insight into how deep people who are in the know, people who are designing this stuff and creating it and working with it every day, basically have realized that what they've created is something that's actually potentially extremely dangerous and don't want their own kids to use it. But how about grown-ups? Who knows who this guy is? Anybody? So we got two or three hands. So one person knows TheraBreath. What's that? Facebook. Okay, we got a few people know who this guy is, right? Mark Zuckerberg, right? This is him actually testifying in front of Congress because they wanted to ask a bunch of questions about this product he created. How many users do you guys think there are on Facebook currently across the globe? What do you guys think? A million?
A billion.
5 billion. 5 billion. Okay. I think how many people are there in the world? It's like 8 billion or something like that? Like 8 billion. Alright. Well, you're not so far off. 2.3 billion active users. So out of like 8 billion, that's like I don't know, anyone good at math? It's like a third. Okay, it's like a third, basically a third of everyone in the entire planet uses Facebook. That's quite a lot. Of those, 1.7 billion are regular users from their mobile devices. And 1.5 billion log in every single day, right? At least once a day, right? I think half of those people actually live in RBS. But that was not that was not in the statistics that I found. This guy, Sean Parker, was one of the original founders of Facebook. And he also made very big news when he actually came out publicly, caused quite a stir. And he actually said that he regretted the fact that he had helped to create Facebook because of what they had created. It says here, ex-Facebook president Sean Parker, site made to exploit human vulnerability. Site's founding president, who became a billionaire thanks to the company, says God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains, right? Sean Parker described himself as a conscientious objector. He said that, you know, basically other people can use internet, but, you know, he's not interested. He's not interested. So as you can imagine, this was big news for Facebook. Everyone's like, wait a minute. You're one of the guys who created Facebook, and you're saying that it's this horrible thing? Shortly after, about a month later, another one of the early founders of Facebook, this guy here, I don't know if I should try to pronounce his name, let's just call him Chamath, because I imagine that's how you pronounce his first name. He came out and said something even more extreme, in my opinion. He said that social media is ripping society apart. And he had some really choice words for Facebook. He said there was no way that he would use it, no way he would let his children to use it. He said he expressed regret for his part in building tools that destroy the, quote, social fabric of how society works. So again, we're talking about something very, very toxic and dangerous, right? So again, if you compare this to the whole, you know, this idea of like responsibility to your consumer, where is it, right? You know, I like to always check the news before I give a talk, and so I looked in the news actually today, and this was just, I saw this in today's news, just came out, as you can see there's a date, January 15th, 2019, I guess it was first, you know, published yesterday. It's a survey. Americans spend nearly half their waking hours looking at screens. Okay, so that means that if, let's say the average person sleeps 7 hours a night, right? So 24 minus 7 is, somebody help me? 17, right? So 17. So if you're spending half of that, means you're spending about 8.5 hours every day, right? So literally half of every hour that you're awake, or of all the time you're awake, you're on a screen. That means either you are on your computer, you're on your phone, you're on the TV, something like that, right? And they said that for on average, it means it's about 8,000 days straight for in a person's lifetime they spend on screens. Okay, so as you see, this is quite a serious phenomenon, and people seem to be definitely hooked.
We're looking at a screen now.
Yes, you're looking at a screen, I'm looking at a screen, we're all looking at a screen. And that brings us to the next slide, which says, what's the point of being afraid of the zombie apocalypse when you're already a zombie, right? I think it's interesting, you know, we're lucky that we live in a place like Ramat Beit Shemesh where not everyone has a smartphone. It's interesting if you guys ever get a chance to go outside of the town. I went to Tel Aviv not that long ago, and I got on a bus, and it's shocking. What's shocking is that that's actually how the rest of the world is. Every single person on the bus was on their phone. It didn't matter if they were old or young or men or women. I mean, there were old ladies on their phone. Every single person was looking down, right? There was not one person looking up.
Except the driver.
The driver, I'm sure people here can tell stories. People who ride the bus have seen the bus drivers using the phone as they're driving. I know I've seen that. Okay. This is like one of those like internet memes. This is like, you know, one of those inspirational quotes. Have you ever heard this one? Dance like no one is watching. Anyone ever heard this? Nobody. Okay, a couple of people maybe don't want to acknowledge it publicly. But this is like one of those, you know, things like, you know, basically cut loose, you know, don't worry so much what everyone's thinking, you know, like just let yourself be free, right? Don't worry about it. So, but today, in today's culture, it has a slightly different meaning. It says dance like no one is watching because everyone is on their phone, so no one is watching. If you look at groups of people, right, you'll see this when people go out to dinner, you'll see it with groups of friends, right? Again, if, you know, you don't see it as much here in the Ramah, but you go Haifa, Yerushalayim, wherever it is, pass by a restaurant on any given weeknight, and you see couples out to eat, both people will have their heads down looking at their phone. No one is, I'm like, what's the purpose of going out? You know, if you're just going to stare at your screen, you know, you could do it at home for free, right? Okay, so that brings us to the problem, right? So we have this problem where we have literally billions of people, both young and old and everyone in between, who are hooked on this technology, right? And the problem is, at least the people who designed it seem to be saying that it's actually very toxic and very dangerous. So here's the problem. Okay, I think all of us are familiar with what this is, right? This is a cigarette, obviously. And all of us today know that cigarettes are extremely dangerous, right? No one, I don't know, maybe there are some places in the world where people still think that cigarettes are harmless and innocuous, but I can't imagine where that would be. I imagine even in the most, you know, underdeveloped place of people, there must be some awareness that this is something which potentially, you know, can kill you, right? It happens to be that people did not always realize that, though. And not that long ago, people thought that smoking was neutral, and some people even thought it was healthy, right? Again, this may seem hard to imagine, but this is an actual advertisement for the 1950s for Camel cigarettes. Bragging that more doctors smoke Camel cigarettes than any other cigarette, right? And which, again, you know, when you see this, like, just think about this. This seems almost like fiction, right? Who could imagine that back then a doctor would be touting the benefits of smoking cigarettes, right? You know, be like me, smoke cigarettes, right? But you know, our consciousness and our awareness of whether something is good for us changes over time, right? So back then, people thought cigarettes, what's the big deal, right? Right now, people think, you know, internet, smartphones, what's the big deal, right? It's normal, everybody does it, right? You know, don't be so uptight, it's fine, right? Don't worry so much, okay? What we discovered about cigarettes is they're not just these sort of harmless little sticks, right? They're actually drug delivery devices, right? That actually, the purpose of a cigarette, it's a vehicle to deliver a drug, in this case, nicotine, right? And when you view it through that lens, it suddenly becomes something, it seems much more serious or much more sinister, right? So this here, we all know what this is, right? This is the mighty smartphone. Interestingly, he's using WhatsApp, which I think is interesting because, you know, we don't usually think of WhatsApp as being addictive or anything like that or problematic, but I know for me, I use WhatsApp quite a bit, and I think it's actually a bigger problem than people realize. And I think that we have to start thinking of smartphones as actually portable drug delivery devices, right? The same way that a cigarette delivers nicotine, right? And that's the purpose of it. A smartphone is actually this portable device that people can carry with them at all times, right? Whether they're at home, whether they're on the move, whether they're at work, right? It's always right there, right? And you can pull it out and you get your little fix, right? You get your little dopamine fix. Right, when you pull it out, you check your email, you check your message, you check your notifications, whatever it is. Doesn't have to be video games, but that too. And it's a very potent and addictive drug. And maybe I would say it could even be the most addictive drug ever, right, in terms of the availability, right? Because most drugs, as we know them, are limited by our ability to acquire them, right? Whether it's alcohol or cocaine or marijuana, whatever it is, you have to buy it, right? And it costs money, and you have to find someone to get it, right? And there's only so much you can consume, right? This, once you have a smartphone in your pocket, it's unlimited. It's 24/7. It's whatever you want. It's around the clock. I guess unless you're in a shul basement where there's no Wi-Fi or reception, but everywhere else, there is no limit to how much of this drug you can continue to consume. Okay, so just like you have here the drug delivery device, DDD, I came up with my own three Ds to talk about what I consider the problems with smartphones. Okay, and they are one, distraction, two, distancing, and three, destruction. Okay, and we'll talk about now what those three things are. Okay, so the first one is distraction, right? I think all of us know that when you're on your smartphone, or those of you who have smartphones, when you're on your smartphone, or when other people are on smartphone, you're distracted, right? Whether you're behind the wheel, right? Whether you are crossing the street, whether you're sitting at your desk, whether you're trying to have a conversation with someone, right? It's very hard to focus when you have something much more powerful that is vying for your attention at all times, right? You got that little beep, right? That little notification, that little, you know, thing. It's like, oh, what? I gotta, you know, excuse me. I'm sorry. Whatever it is, it has first dibs, right? That phone is the most powerful thing, right? It could be there. You're there on a date or whatever, right? Well, you know, someone who's meeting someone for the first time, but you know, that phone ring is like, I gotta take this, you know, I gotta, let me just check. It's probably nothing, but I just gotta check, right? It's very powerful. Did I just hear that? That was someone messing around. I should have said, please turn off your phones before we started the thing, but I mean, there's no reception here, so don't worry about that. So this is obviously, right, this is, it's not just behind the wheel, but I think, you know, it happens to be that it's, you know, in Israel, you know, there's very, very stiff penalties for driving while on your phone, and I think that's a good thing. I know where my family lives in Florida, it's actually still legal to drive while you're talking on your phone or texting or any of that stuff. It's not illegal. I was fortunate enough to get into a bad car accident about 20 years ago. before they were smartphones, when they were dumb phones, when they were regular phones, and I was on the phone, and it was my fault. I was driving through Teaneck, New Jersey, and I was talking to a friend who lived in Teaneck, because I was there for a SimCon, and I was thought of my friend, and I called him up, and I went through a, it was a two-way stop. I think there were stops, I thought it was just a through street, but it was on two stops, on two sides there were stop signs, and I just went right through, car came through, completely smashed into my side. Fortunately, it was the other car, it was just me. The car was totaled, I wasn't hurt, but I mean, I learned a very important lesson, which is that this is, you know, it's not a game. It's not a game, it's very, very serious. And, you know, like I said, I think I was lucky that I was able to learn a lot. I mean, but you don't have to, you know, have that happen for you realizing how serious that is. Okay, so some other things here along the lines of distraction, right? So this study came out, I think it was last year. Just looking at your smartphone makes you less intelligent, study finds, right? So that's quite a headline. What they found is actually just, they actually did a study where they would actually have people take certain tests. And in one part of the study, they actually you left your smartphone there on the desk, and in the other one, it was not there in the room. Just having it there in your eyesight, people scored worse, right? Not if it was ringing, not if, just having it there where you could see it, right? Similarly, they have studies that have shown that just having a cell phone in your room, people have worse quality sleep. Even if the phone is powered off, if it's in your bedroom, people sleep much more lightly and shorter, and they wake up more often. Because they just knowing that the phone is there and seeing it gives them this sense like I might be getting a call. I might need to get it. Okay, this is also something which has been getting a lot of worthy coverage in the last year or so. The risk of teen depression and suicide is linked to smartphone use, studies said. That basically there has been a steep rise in the suicide rate for teens and also for teen depression. Recently, and they think this has a lot to do with the increased use of smartphones. There's a whole host of problems that teenagers are struggling with because of their dependence on smartphones. I think it's interesting though that we tend to sort of focus on like young people, and we worry very much about kids and teenagers, and we're not as worried about us as adults, but we should be. Okay, the second category is distance, right? So this, for me, as an addiction therapist, this is sort of my area of specialty, right? Because what happens when we have these devices, they create distance between people, they allow distance to grow between people, and people use them as an excuse to avoid intimacy, right? There is this phenomenon, which is a recent thing, which I heard about. And it's a very interesting term, and when you hear what it's called, you will all know exactly what I'm talking about. It's called phubbing, phubbing. And what it's a combination of two words, phone and snubbing, right? And basically what it means is you're talking to someone, and you're having a nice conversation, right? And all of a sudden they get that, you know, that little thing, oh, I got to take this, like, oh, you know, I'm sorry, like, let me just, oh. And they pick up the phone, it's like, you know, look at this poor woman here, right? And this is obviously, it's sort of a comical, right? But you know, it really feels awful when it's happened to you. And I know that everyone here, it's happened to them, and I bet that a lot of people in here have also been on the other end where they have fubbed somebody else, right? Where they're talking to someone. It could be your wife, right? It could be your husband. It could be your kids. It could be your best friend, whoever, right? And you have to take that call, and you wind up snubbing the other person. Right? The definition of phubbing is the act of snubbing someone in a social setting by looking at your phone instead of paying attention to them. Like I said, it is very hurtful. I think a study showed that 97% of people who were phubbed by their partner while they were eating a meal said that the food actually tasted worse. Interesting, right? But you have to take that literally. Like, in other words, it really makes you, everything just seems like worse, right? When someone that you care about treats you like that, you feel like garbage, right? And it doesn't matter that it's not personal, but it still feels like garbage. And it is very serious. As I was saying before, smartphones are a great way to avoid intimacy, right? So a lot of people struggle with being intimate, right? And by intimate, I mean being emotionally close to other people. Right? Smartphones allow people to keep their distance from other people, right? So in other words, I have a lot of couples that I work with who they don't actually talk to each other anymore because they have smartphones. So they actually literally just text each other, right? Even tough conversations, they will WhatsApp each other. And I actually have created a contract for, I created it for one client, and I've actually subsequently used it with a number of clients, that they agree for a certain amount of time they're not going to text their wife or their partner at all, and they're going to only use the phone, right? Actually pick up the phone or talk to them in person. And I should tell you that the people who I've given this to, no one has been able to sustain this for more than a very short period of time, right? Usually after a week or two, people are like, it's amazing, I love it, it's great, thank you so much for making us sign this. And then a week or two later, it's like, well, you know, we were sitting in bed, and he's playing video games, and I'm like, wait a minute, what happened here? We said no devices in the bedroom. We said, you know, we're supposed to talk to each other. It's very hard. So for people who are already struggling with intimacy, it becomes a very convenient way to avoid getting close to your partner. Okay? And again, this is, as I said, this is this whole realm of addictions, is this realm of distance. This study actually just came out a couple days ago, and I was very happy to see this. It says, childhood emotional maltreatment predicts problematic smartphone use among adolescents, right? So this is, again, this is very interesting, because this may not seem intuitive, right? In other words, what's the connection between having, being abused in your childhood, whether it's physical abuse or sexual abuse or verbally or emotionally abused, feeling like you were neglected or whatever it is, and then why would that cause someone to use more smartphones or to develop an addiction to the internet? The reason is because of their early childhood experiences, they find it hard to get close to people, right? Their earliest experiences growing up were ones where they felt they couldn't trust people, right? And they had to keep their distance. So instead of actually connecting with people, it's much easier to connect with someone remotely because it feels like connection, right? If you go on Facebook, you can feel like, wow, I have like, 1,200 friends. You know, I have so many friends. Meanwhile, you haven't left your room for weeks, right? You know, you haven't actually sat down and looked someone in the eyes for who knows how long. You haven't actually gone out to eat with your wife or your friends in years, right? But I feel really connected, right? Because I'm on Facebook. So again, these sort of pseudo connections or faux connections are very appealing for people who have had this kind of these traumatic experiences in childhood, and that would predispose people to wind up getting addicted. Okay, this is just along the same lines. 87% of teens would rather communicate via text than face to face. That's quite a statistic, right? And like I said, if it's happening to like grown-ups, you know, the grown-ups would prefer to text with each other than to actually talk to each other face to face. Imagine teenagers now, right? Because these teenagers, they've grown up, they never had to learn the skills of how to actually deal with other people, right? It's very different to have an argument with someone via text as it is in person, right? You say something nasty to someone in a text message, you don't actually see how it affects them, right? You tell someone, oh, you're fat or you're stupid or you're whatever, right? You know, when you say that to someone's face, that's actually hard to do, because you see the person like, it affects them, right? And then you realize, oh my gosh, look what I just did. But to fire that message off on your phone or something like that, that's easy, right? So what I think we all need to be very concerned about is that we're raising a generation of people, and it doesn't look at this point like it's going to get better, it just looks like it's going to continue to get worse, where there's no emphasis on learning the ability to connect and interact socially in any meaningful way. Okay, speaking of connections, right, I thought this was a funny picture, right, because here you have the entire family, everyone's on their devices, and I think what's funny about this one is that everyone's smiling, right? I think if you ever, and it's interesting, when I was looking for stock images for this talk, a lot of the pictures, I typed into Google image search, everyone on their phones, right? So you have a lot of these pictures with, all these models holding their phones, everyone's like, five people, and they're all smiling. If you ever see a group of people on their phones, no one is smiling, right? Everyone is just like, everyone's in a trance, right? No one is exactly like, people are, they're just like that, you know? So I think it's funny, and this idea that, everyone's on their devices and it's actually a happy family, it's basically a contradiction. It's not possible. In fact, the families that are the most connected, right, where everyone's got their own device, are the least happy and the least connected. family with the most problems.
You send it to Hezbollah?
I'll take questions at the end, okay? All right. So this was another picture which I found, and this one actually, I don't know how, if this one affects you, but this one actually makes me extremely sad, I think, because it looks really realistic, right? I mean, I think it's obvious that these are models, this isn't a real picture, but what I thought was really realistic about this picture is look at the little girl, right? In the other pictures that I found where you had like a mom or a dad on the phone, the kid was like this. You know, the kid was like making a pose to, you know, to show his disgust. But in reality, this is the reality, right? When, if you go home and your kids try and talk to you, right? And I know that I have certainly been guilty of this, and just seeing this, it hurts because like I feel like I know what that feeling is like, you know? Your kids don't say, usually, right? They don't usually say, Dad, get off your phone. Usually they just they feel passed over. You know, they feel less important. And think about how that's affecting kids, right? Again, as adults, we talked about, you know, this statistic before, but 97% of people who are fubbed, right, when they're going out, you know, on a date or you know, eating a meal with their partner, feel the food tasted worse, how deeply it affects them. Imagine how it affects a kid who's growing up, right? A child, their relationship with their parents is the most important relationship in the entire world, and it's the template for the rest of their relationships that they will ever have, right? In other words, if they feel that their parents are trustworthy and safe, they will believe that people are trustworthy and safe. If they believe that their parents are present and interested and available, they will believe that other people out there are potentially interested and available, right, and present. But if their parents are not present, and if their parents are not interested, right, and their parents are distracted, and their parents, I mean, look here, she's clearly like, you know, she even took her daughter out to lunch here, right? Right? It's even a special occasion, right? It's like, you know, we see really what's more important to the mom, right? This kid grows up, and it's not verbal necessarily. It's not something that they can say, oh, you know what? When I was a kid, my mom spoke on the cell phone. I felt like I was, you know, I felt like I wasn't important, right? But it becomes part of who they feel they are, who they believe they are, right? Which is someone that's not necessarily worthy of other people's attention, of other people's love. And what that means is that people grow up with a very damaged sense of self. Okay? Unfortunately, I was not able to attach the video for this, but this is something, it's a scary looking picture, right? Yeah, a little bit? How about the women's side? Any reaction over there? It looks scary to anybody? Not getting a lot of reaction tonight. I guess I'm getting a lot of still face, actually. This still face experiment, this is an experiment that was done at Harvard University. And like I said, to actually see the video of how it was done, it's really very, very jarring and very disturbing. What they did is they took babies at a certain age and mothers, right, of in normal, happy, healthy relationships, right? And they were volunteers through this psychological experiment. And what they did is they would bring the mother and this baby into the room where they have the cameras running to observe both the mother and the baby. And first they would have the mother and the baby play together as they normally would at home, right? And you see everything's going well, you know, the baby is responding in a normal way. Everything's going well. And then what they do is they ask the mother to actually to ignore the baby for 2 minutes straight, right? You know, 2 minutes seems like a very short amount of time. When you're watching this video, it seems like it's hours, and it's excruciating. You see this baby going from being happy and playful and upbeat to slowly getting confused as she tries to get the mother to respond, right? To getting more and more concerned, to becoming completely desperate and actually losing control of her posture and just completely just kind of, you know, collapsing in tears and just desperation because she, at that moment, thinks that her mother has abandoned her, right? Now, again, this is, at the end of the 2 minutes, by the way, the mother then is, you know, supposed to go and, you know, greet the baby and, you know, and go back to normal, and you see the baby's fine. That's the good news. But what I think the takeaway from this is that this is 2 minutes. This is 2 minutes, right? And again, these experiments were done, I'm not sure when they were originally done, but definitely before the age of smartphones. I don't know if it was 30 years ago or 40 years ago. Imagine now in the age of smartphones, right? How many times as parents we are showing our kids and our spouses and everyone else that's important to us, that they, that we, we're not there for them, right? That we're not present. And again, you see it in the baby, because a baby doesn't need to pretend, right? A baby can't pretend, right? A baby, you see right away how it's affecting them, right? But it is deeply harmful and hurtful, and you know, as long when there's a, again, when it's only 2 minutes and you know, and the mother comes back, everything's okay. You know, these kind of things, it doesn't you know, there's no long-term lasting damage. But when it's something like this, it happens over and over and over again, it absolutely affects someone and how they feel about themselves and how they feel about the world. Okay? This is also just on a separate note. Other research that said that people, the more people use smartphones, the less likely they are to go outside and to be spend time in nature, right? And I think that it makes sense intuitively. You know, and it's just another way that people are, I get distancing or getting distance from things that matter and from enjoying healthy habits and being connected to the world, okay? The last section here is destruction, right? So I know destruction sounds harsh, but some of it is actually quite harsh. This is when things, when the distraction and the distancing go unchecked, and they really, you know, are get the worst possible, then we have destruction, right? So one is actually a physical injury, right? So this is, like I said, this is what happens to people who are driving just distracted, right? People who are crossing the streets. There was actually another video which I wanted to attach to this, which I couldn't figure out how to get the video, but I don't know if anyone remembers this, but this was maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago. There was a bear that got loose in suburban Los Angeles. It couldn't have been that long ago. But and it was they were, you know, in LA they have all these helicopters because they're always like chasing people and stuff. So they had, like, you know, a news chopper like following this bear as it's meandering through the neighborhood. And, you know, the bear is walking down the street in the suburban neighborhood, and he turns a corner and you see some guy on his phone, and he's just like, you know, like this. And he has no idea that there's a bear on the loose, right? And you see him, like, as he's there, you know, walking on his phone, and he looks up and he sees like a huge black bear, you know, 30 feet away from him, and he turns around and runs. And it's, you know, it's comical, but that's how a lot of us are when we're on our phones, because we just are not aware of what's going on. So physical injuries is definitely a real risk. Loss of job, right? So again, you know, the distraction that happens when people are on their phones is you know, it's very hard to do a good job when people are constantly being distracted, right? And I went to a restaurant here in town, and the woman was we were ordering food, and I went to the register, and she had her phone in her lap, right? And she had her hands on the computer or whatever, and she was going like this the entire time. Like, in other words, like, she couldn't even go like a whole sentence. You know, like, you know, it was so strong, the pull there. I imagine, you know, it must be very, very hard, you know, to do something like that. And it's definitely not good for people's professional career. Okay, so divorce, right? We mentioned this thing with, you know, addictions and distancing, right? And certainly, it makes it harder to get help, right? Because if your partner is checking out using a smartphone or the internet, there's no one there to try and work on things with, right? And they may not even realize they're checking out because they've got, you know, 500 friends, right? Or they've got, you know, whatever. You know, so they have their whole online fantasy world, you know, where they have all the people they connect with. So who needs real people when they might be, you know? And unfortunately, a lot of divorces. I think that there was a statistic that was released by the Organization of American Divorce Lawyers. It said something like 90-something percent of divorces were connected with problematic internet use. And I believe that that's true. Addictions, like I said, right? Feeling unloved and unwanted, and this is a problem, like I said, for children who are growing up and basically are turning into adults who then have a very tough time in the world connecting to other people and feel often alone and unloved and unwanted. And health problems, right? There's a lot of research lately that said that sitting is the new smoking. I don't know if anyone has heard this idea, that basically sitting for hours a day is more harmful for you than, or as harmful as being a full-time smoker, right? Because of all the health problems, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, all these things, and certainly a lot of that has to do with people being attached to their screens, right? There's no reason to go outside when you have all this great stimulation right from your seat. Okay, so what is the solution, right? What do we do about this problem, right? Hopefully at this point, everyone's aware this is a serious problem. What do we do about it? Okay, so the first question is the first possible solution is cut the cord, right? And by that I mean, you know, do you really need a smartphone? You know, there's been a lot of people, a lot of celebrities actually, who have been very public about getting rid of their smartphones, right? I can think of some like top name like entertainers, one very famous music producer who said, you know, I don't want a smartphone, right? Because I don't want all that distraction on it. There was a famous rapper who said that it was getting in the way of his creativity, so he got rid of his smartphone, right? So it's a question I think that all of us who have smartphones can ask. You know, even though everyone around us has it, I think there's reason for us to be concerned. Do we really need it? You know, is it actually worth what? Do the positives outweigh the negatives? And I guess a separate question is, do your kids need it? And this is something which, again, I feel fortunate that to be part of this culture where it's not so normal to give your kids smartphones. I'm shocked when I go to America to see that people give their 9 and 10-year-old kids smartphones. It's normal. I was talking to a client of mine that I Skype with who lives in Westchester County, and you know, he was telling about his 9-year-old kid and talking about his smartphone. I'm like, wait a minute, you gave him a smartphone? And he's like, yeah. He's like, everyone in this class has one. And I was like, you're not concerned about that? He's like, no. Like, he had no idea what I was talking about. If you are, though, if you do live in a culture where people realize that smartphones are problematic, you should ask yourself, do your kids actually need smartphones, right? Just because they want one, does that mean you should give them one? Okay? Two, go dumb, right? And by this I mean dumb phones, right? Dumb phones are what they call feature phones, and here we have another name for it, we call them kosher phones, right? These are phones that actually, all they do is call and text, right? It's weird because, again, being part of our culture, we're all familiar with this concept of a kosher phone. But I think a lot of us feel that kosher phones are not for us, right? Again, those are for people who are very charedi, right? Those are for people who live in bet, right? Those are for people who, you know, have long payas or whatever. You know, when, nothing against anyone here has long payas, but I remember when there was the Asifa. If you guys remember, there was a big Asifa in New York, which it seems like it was 10 years ago. I don't remember, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, where they had something like, I don't know, tens of thousands of Orthodox Jews turning up in a major stadium, filling a stadium in New York to basically protest, you know, or to demonstrate unity that they thought that the internet was problematic. There was so much pushback that people in the, you know, in the front community were like, this is nuts. Like, this is backwards. This makes no sense. Like, these are people who are against progress. These are people who are against technology. You know, this is not for us. I think that we should look at it not from a lens of people are trying to deprive you, you know, or tell you what to do. It's more of like people need to ask themselves, is this good for me? Is this good for my family, right? And if it's not, you can still have a phone that doesn't have all these other features. Okay, so setting up fences, right? If you're not willing to get rid of your smartphone, if that's not a step that you feel like you want to take, so then there are tools that you can use that will make your smartphone safer, right? You can set up filters, right, that can limit your time, right? They can monitor what activity you and other people in your family are doing, right? Especially if you have kids, I think this should be for everybody. Everyone should have a filter on all of their devices. I recently started working with a client just in the last few weeks who he actually was using his PlayStation 4 to access problematic content on the internet, which I'd heard about it, but I never actually had a client who was actually using, because they can surf the web, and he was actually using that device because all the other devices were blocked, but the game system was still open. So everyone needs to have filters. There are apps that can monitor how much time for yourself, if you want to keep track of how much time you're spending on these things here. Whoops. You know, there's an app that I found that I use myself called Digital Detox, and what it does, it basically locks me out of my phone every night at a certain time, and it doesn't come back on until the next day. And there's nothing that I can do to get rid of it, right? I mean, when it's not during the detox, I can get rid of it the next day. But during that time, I can't uninstall it. I can't, nothing I can do. And I have it set up so that every day at a certain time, it will start. So there are things that you can do to limit. Okay, the next thing is be mindful. Okay, and again, being mindful here is about thinking about, you know, what we have these devices for, right? Again, not just whether or not I should have it, but what do I need it for? What am I using it for? Am I actually using it as a way to avoid, reality? Am I using it as a way to avoid my partner? Am I using it as a way to avoid my kids? Am I using it as a way to avoid reality? Am I using it as a way to avoid boredom, right? A lot of my clients come to the understanding that part of the reason why they need to be constantly online is because when they're not doing anything, when they're sitting still, they feel awful, right? They may feel really bad about themselves, but as long as they're busy, as long as they're distracted, they have no idea, right? They don't know that, they don't feel that. So being constantly connected, being constantly online, right, means not having to feel bad, right? If you want to fight that, you have to get in touch with yourself and maybe work on healing, right? If you have some issues like that, get help. Okay, next is get in touch, and by that I mean reconnect with other people. Okay, the addiction that I focus on, which is internet addiction, pornography addiction, sexual addiction, people think it has to do with sex or pornography, right? What it really has to do is connection, right? As I mentioned before, that research that just came out a couple days ago, which confirmed that there's a strong correlation between early childhood abuse and the likelihood of getting addicted to smartphones and the internet. There's a lot there that for people who have trouble with connecting, right? So if you want to get better, you have a problem, that you feel like you're hooked, you're addicted to the internet, you're addicted to your smartphone, you need to learn how to connect to other people. You need to get more people in your life. You need to actually get some friends. You need to actually get to know your spouse. You need to really make yourself available and to connect with people. Okay, and the last one is this idea of getting outside, right? It's really important that in an age where we're always connected, there, like I said, there's no reason to ever get up and go outside. So get outside, put down the phone, turn it off, right? Go outside. I know if you're not used to doing this on a regular basis and you do it, it feels amazing. I kind of feel like when I go outside, when I go for a walk or a hike or whatever, I feel like I've discovered something brand new that no one has ever discovered before. And it's like, wow, this is great. You go sit by the ocean or whatever it is, and you're like, oh my God, this is so much better than actually sitting, in your office in front of a screen or on the couch on your phone. So those are my my suggestions for how to overcome this addiction to smartphones. And that's it. Thank you very much. If anyone has any questions?
Yeah, just before we take questions, I just want to ask, I'm going to take a very quick survey. I'm going to ask you how you found out, what was the main reason that brought you to the Shia tonight? I'll give you an option of whether it was email or a poster you may have seen in a shul or something that you saw in a magazine. So please let me know, but raise your hand, which of those was your most important reason that you came here? If you believe that you came here mostly because of an email that you saw, please raise your hand. Okay, if you think that you came here because you saw an advertisement in the RBS Views or some other magazine, please raise your hand. Sorry? Okay, if you saw a poster in your shul or something in your email. Okay.
There you go.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, great. So any questions anyone has? No? Okay. Oh, no, okay, all of a sudden. Yeah, yes, doctor.
Many people who start with the addiction is because of the fact, or with the need for it, is because of they have a need for it. And people aren't looking necessarily for permission in today's world with jobs and banking and this and that. So how do you, it's kind of hard to cut the cord.
You're saying that all right. So if I understand the question, you're saying that basically people have real legitimate needs for having to go online, whether it's paying bills or
for work.
What do they do in that case? I think, but that's not really, again, if people have those specific things, I don't think those people need to worry. In other words, if you're only going online and you're only doing those things, you know what I'm saying? Like, how much time does that take a week? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if it takes like an hour or two or something. You know, if you're only using it to pay bills or something like that, I don't think, you know, those are the people that need to worry. I'm not sure, maybe I'm not getting your whole question.
You don't see the same problems with those people who are getting involved because of a legitimate reason.
Yeah, right, exactly. In other words, I think that, you know, for those people, not everyone will get hooked, right? It's sort of like the same thing with other drugs like alcohol, right? Not everyone who drinks alcohol becomes an alcoholic, right? But for some reason, certain people drink alcohol and they get hooked right away, right? Other people, right, they try drugs and they know from that first time they try it, they're hooked, right? Same thing with this. Not everyone who uses the internet winds up, you know, developing a dependence or a serious addiction, right? So, you know, for those people, they don't need to worry, right? And maybe not everyone needs to abstain, right? For most people, they can drink on parm and not have to worry about becoming alcoholics, right? So for those people you're talking about, you know, it could be that using a small amount of internet is not problematic. Okay? In the back.
Can you elaborate a little bit about, this, I think this kind of applies to what you were saying, can you elaborate about the detriment of the screen in particular? In other words, if you are on the computer for your business, but by the same token, instead of reading a certain article, you can choose to print it out, or print out an email, and then look it on the paper. So there'd be a value in spending, you know, only 60 or 70% of your time looking at your screen instead of 100% of the time you spend in your business on your screen, because you'll print certain things out. Would you recommend that for whatever reason, if so, why?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
It seems a lot of this talk was talking about screen time. Of that, a lot of that was talking about the Bittelsmann element of it, that just so much time spent on just, you know, reading articles on the WhatsApps and the Facebook. So leaving that aside, just focusing strictly on legitimate, like you were saying, legitimate reasons to be on for the purpose of getting your job done.
Yeah.
If some of getting your job done could be done less on the screen, because you could print certain things out and read them on paper, would that be a bet? Would you
I don't know if it's the screen itself that's causing the problem. Do you understand? In other words, it's a sense that, like, you know, since I got involved in working with addictions, I've discovered that people can get addicted to lots of things that I didn't know they could get addicted to, you know? I have a client who came to see me because his wife caught him having an affair. And he basically transferred his addiction to becoming a competitive runner and became very addicted to running. And, you know, runs tremendous amounts of distance, not normal amounts of, super marathons. And, you know, I didn't realize that running, could be an addiction, or that it might be an addiction. The same thing with with working, right? A lot of people, you know, people who are workaholics, it's a legitimate addiction, which, again, I you know, if you would have asked me that however many years ago, I would have said, like, you know, there are certain things that we actually look up to in people, right? Whether it's like compulsively exercising or compulsively working. And no one would say it's an addiction because they get so much positive feedback. Like, wow, like, you have such a great work ethic, right? You work 16 hours a day, like, and you're doing so well. Like, that's amazing. I wish I were you, right? Or you run a 50-mile marathon, like, you're Superman. What do I have to do to become you? But that's actually, it's doing the same thing as sitting on a device all day, right? You're basically disconnecting from reality. You're disconnecting from the people in your life, right? You're avoiding having to deal with the things that you need to deal with to be a human being. So I hope that answered your question. Okay, and who else? Yes?
What would you say to a 12-year-old boy who, let's say, likes to play computer games because he's been exposed with his friends, and then, you know, he wants to, let's say, improve, if he learns a certain amount he wants to play on the internet. So how would you deal with that?
Yeah. The question was about video games, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't actually mention that in my talk. Video games are extremely addictive, you know, and I think when if you remember the quotes that some of the founders of Facebook mentioned about Facebook, right? They said that it was designed to exploit a vulnerability in human nature, right? If you talk to the people who create the games, their entire job or the entire focus is how to keep people from turning it off. Right? They want people hooked. They want people sucked in. So you have to realize that when you're talking about video games, it's not something innocent, right? Again, like, when I was a kid, I remember when they came out with the first Atari gaming system, and the graphics were so bad, and the gameplay was so, you know, boring. But still, it was, you know, you could really get into it. You know, we did, you know, at the time. I mean, there was nothing better, right? It was pretty awesome. But now, what they have is so, you know, layers and layers. It's like these evil psychologists, you know, all like, you know, putting their minds together and housing people so that they will literally, you know, never turn it off. You have to be very careful. And you have to realize, again, that it's not innocent, right? It's not the same thing as playing a board game, right? It's not the same thing as playing cards, right? You have to... So in other words, what I'm trying to say is that I'm not sure that any measure of something that's highly addictive is okay, right? So in other words, like if it's something like, let's say, heroin, right, or crack, right? No one says smoking crack cocaine, you know, on the weekends, special occasion. No one says that about crack cocaine. Everyone says you can never do crack cocaine, right? So when it gets something like these video games, I'm not sure if there's any measure that's actually safe for kids. So, yeah. Who else? Yes.
What do you call sort of like? What's the get there of someone that's addicted? Like, is there a certain red line that they cross?
Yeah.
The
question was, where do you draw the line of, you know, when someone's addicted or not, right? Because as I said before, you know, different people can use these things a certain amount. How do they know if they're addicted? I think one of the important hallmarks is someone who is doing something and they want to stop it and they can't. That's not the only qualification, but that's a big one, right? So if people say, look, you know, my wife is telling me I can't play the video games, she hates it when I go on and I play 8 hours straight, right? Or I'm playing 8 hours straight and I can't wake up the next day or whatever, you know, and I'm getting warned at work, right, by my boss, who says, you keep coming late, I'm gonna fire you. And they're like, yeah, I gotta stop. And then they still can't stop. So that's a good, you know, that's a good indication. That's one of the measures that someone is addicted. Okay? Not the only one, but an important one. Yes?
I don't know how to phrase this, but people who learn lots of Torah,
yeah,
we look up to that a lot, obviously, yeah, and we all try to, you know, aspire to do that. But again, maybe I don't know where I'm coming from here, but I can see it if someone's completely obsessed with learning, they could also affect their relationship with their family, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. You know, I think, you know, you have to be careful I have to be careful how I answer that. I mean, I happen to think it's absolutely can be an addiction. There's no question. And I think that, you know, it's along the same.
We tell our kids stories of these great.
Well, yeah, and then people say, well, you know, it's different because it's Torah and Torah's holy and it's from a shaman. You know, so, and I'm not arguing with that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not the authority on that. But I can certainly say that some qualities there, where we see people who are compulsive learners, right? The masmidim, right? And again, I'm not saying that all people who love learning and people are addicted and are running away. I'm not saying that, okay? I want to be very clear about that. But absolutely, it can be a place for a person to hide out, right? And again, I don't mean someone who doesn't know how to learn. Could be brilliant, you know? But yes, because if I am in the base medrash 16 hours a day, halavai, my wife is here, she's like, no, you're not. She's like, that'll never happen. But if I'm in the base medrash 14 hours a day, 16, you know, everyone's like, my gosh, that Brad guy, he is, what, you know, see that, son? One day you're going to be like Brad, right? Yeah, my wife is, yeah, she's turning colors over there, she knows. Yeah, anyway, but yeah, I absolutely think so. It can be a way to run away from reality, because, you know, maybe you don't want to deal with the stress of going home, you know? Maybe your wife is going to, you know, yell at you when you go home, or, you know, even ask you to help. Right? Or your kids, you don't want to play with you. You don't want to play with them.
Have you had clients who've had difficult relationships because they're not available to their family because they're always in base
medicine? One thing I will say is that, you know, about the clients who come to see me, I can say that, you know, being very, you know, learning a lot of Torah is not, unfortunately, does not inoculate you against developing these kind of addictions. I've had a lot of clients who are, you know, very, very learned and very big masmidim, and, you know, people who finished Shas and people, you know, Rabbanim and that kind of thing, and it affects everyone. So, yeah, unfortunately, I wish I could say that it could inoculate people, but not in my experience. Any other questions? Yeah.
Do you see a distinction when we're talking about disconnect? Do you see a distinction do we say that disconnecting from everything, or is there a distinction between disconnecting from computer internet versus phone internet?
Okay. So you're saying, like, when I talk about cutting the cord.
Yeah.
Cutting the cord. Well, look, I think that they overlap. In other words, the problem, it's not just mobile devices, right? In other words, people who are hooked to their phones are probably also hooked at home, right? And one of the things, that study that just came out yesterday that said that we spend half of our waking hours on screens, is that usually when people take breaks from using their computer, they actually go to their phone. Like that's how they take a break, right? They go from one screen to the next. So, I think that probably, in other words, yeah, I don't think that one is like a safe haven. You understand what I'm saying? Yes.
So just coming back to a little bit of the question I was asking before, I'm reminded now. So if someone's, let's say, learning Dafyomi, and they're listening to a shiur,
yeah.
So it would be better to actually take out a Gemara while they're listening as opposed to going to the Dafyomi network and watching on
stream. No. So again, there's nothing magic, you know, or I say nothing like toxic about the screen itself, right? The problem is that you could in theory use a book. Just a book is a lot less, it's a lot. It doesn't pull you in the same way that a screen does, right?
It's not like you're saying the screen is.
It's not the actual. It's not the screen itself exactly. It's the stimulation. It's the constant, unending flow of information. It's the bottomless pit of information and facts and data and pictures and videos and everything.
See, the fact that someone can click and then see something
exactly.
else.
Exactly.
And then see the next article
yes.
and just constantly looking at other.
Right. Right.
Other.
Okay. All right, so I guess we'll end it here. Thank you very much for coming out on this cold night. And if you have any questions, you can feel free to talk to me afterwards or be in touch with me. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Cool.